my fault, I know I'm selfish. Stand alone, my soul is jealous. It wants love, but I reject it. Trade my joy for my protection. Grab my hand, I'm drowning. I feel my heart pounding. Why haven't you found me yet? I hold you so proudly. Traumas, they surround me. I wish you just loved me back. Watch them laugh at all my secrets. Scream and yell, but I feel speechless. Ask for help, you call it weakness. Lied and promised me my freedom. Grab my hand, I'm drowning. I feel my heart pounding. Why haven't you found me yet? I hold you so proudly. Traumas, they surround me. I wish you just loved me back. Why haven't you found me yet?
When stress exceeds the limits of our body, physical injuries might occur. For example, our skin may split, muscles and tendons bruise, bones break. But what happens to our soul? When we are faced with an extremely stressful experience, such as a natural disaster or a serious accident, all our energies are mobilized to overcome it. However, even an experience such as a difficult birth or the loss of a job can be experienced as traumatic. But more generally, an environment in which love is absent or rejection predominates is likely, in the long run, to work traumatically. If our efforts to overcome these experiences are not sufficient, then internal rifts are created. Experiences are indelibly recorded in our memory and cause psychic traumas. I'm Katerina Badzaiki, and in this week's Infinitely Curious program of ERTH and The Voice of Greece, we will dive into the depths of trauma and explore, in the next five shows, approaches that deal with its healing. Thank you. The branch of psychology that deals with the creation and consequences of mental injuries is psychotraumatology. Its genesis coincides with the World Wars, the Holocaust, the Vietnam War, as well as the technical and natural disasters of the previous century. Trauma therapy includes all specialized therapeutic methods aimed at helping victims of traumatic experiences, also known as EMDR. EMDR method is a synthetic method of psychotherapy which harmoniously combines many successful elements from various effective psychotherapy approaches. In particular, it incorporates elements from person-centered, psychodynamic, cognitive behavioral, interpersonal therapeutic approach, body psychotherapy, as well as therapeutic hypnosis. These elements are included in structured therapeutic protocols which are specially designed to increase therapeutic effectiveness. The initials EMDR mean in English eye movement, desensitization and reprocessing. The originator of the EMDR method is the American psychologist and scientific researcher at the Institute for Psychical Research in Palo Alto, California, Francine Shapiro, who founded it in 1987. The idea arose from an accidental personal experience of hers. While on a walk one day, Shapiro realized that when she had disturbing thoughts, her eyes moved in a certain way, and then the thought no longer upset her.
Then I started doing it deliberately to see if it would work, and the same thing happened. The thought shifted away, and when I brought it back, it wasn't as disturbing. So I thought I stumbled upon some mind process that worked with thoughts. And that's what was so fascinating, because I hadn't been doing it deliberately, but I noticed it happening. And I had to start using my hand to guide them to make similar types of eye movements.
The cause of a traumatic experience can be any real stressful event, such as war, captivity, natural disaster, violent attack, accident, physical or verbal abuse, loss of a loved one, and a serious illness. So the key is the patient's eyes. Shifting the eyes back and forth is the process that mysteriously unlocks the trauma of times past.
When a trauma occurs, that processing mechanism gets disrupted. It doesn't work. The brain goes into shock and the mind just repeats the information over and over again. When we deal with the eye movement in the office, we seem to be able to open up that blocked processing and accelerate it.
Francine Shapiro is the founder and president emeritus of the EMDR Humanitarian Assistance Program, a nonprofit organization that provides assistance to victims of natural disasters and provides training to specialists around the world. In one interview, she explained how EMDR helps patients with nightmares.
It's a perfect example, actually, of what's occurring. The earlier memory, let's say in PTSD, the trauma, being held unprocessed with the emotions, physical sensation, belief. The brain continues to try to process it, and that's what dreaming is about. REM researchers, dream researchers say during REM state, what the brain is attempting to do is process survival information to resolution. That's why all of us have had the experience of feeling disturbed at something, going to sleep and getting up the next morning and feeling better about it with a better understanding of what to do. The brain has done what it's supposed to do. It's processed the information and guiding us appropriately in the future. But when a trauma has occurred, it's disrupted that process. And though the brain is trying to do it during dream, the person continues to wake up in the middle of a nightmare, etc., because it's too disturbing to occur. So within EMDR, one of the things we'd be looking at is what are the nightmare images that a person reports? So for instance, a person who's individual saying they continually wake up in the middle of a nightmare of being chased by a monster through a cave. We target the image of the dream image. And so she's holding in mind being chased through a cave by the monster. We start the processing, and most often what happens is like a veil gets peeled back, and the individual sees what the actual experience is, and the person reports, oh my God, that's the person who molested me, chasing me through my childhood home. The processing moves it to resolution. And the person, again, no longer has that dream image, because once it's fully processed, it's integrated with larger memory networks and arrives at that adaptive resolution. So that dream image does not come back again. So it, happily, that's one of the ways that EMDR is able to function. You don't have to try to change the person's mind about it or talk about it. They don't have to describe it in detail at any time. It's simply identifying the image and the thoughts, et cetera, that go with it, and then processing it to complete resolution.
Critics, though, argue that controlled studies are lacking, with no scientific basis to call EMDR an effective innovation. Some have said that the underlying theory and primary therapeutic mechanism of EMDR are unfalsifiable and non-scientific. Some people also report having intrusive memories, vivid dreams, or flashbacks of their trauma after EMDR treatment. These can be distressing, but they tend to lessen over time as more and more trauma gets resolved. People who should not undergo EMDR include patients who are unable to reprocess their trauma and people of certain medications. Family therapist Katie Moulton explains why.
The truth about EMDR is that it's an 8-phase process. And I had to do some reading and call my friend Alexa to ask her about it. And the entire second phase is completely devoted to us being able to stay in that resilient zone. Meaning, during this phase, they teach you different relaxation techniques and you learn new coping skills and ways to manage the emotional distress that can come up when we're processing through a trauma. And so there's a lot of different tools and techniques that you will try, see if they work, tell them yes or no. And these tools are supposed to not only help us in session stay in that resilient zone, but also help us when we're out of session manage what may come up during the process. Because as we know, when we start processing through a trauma, we can have an increased amount of flashbacks. We can have night terrors and issues where we wake up with a horrible nightmare that felt like we were right back in that trauma. And so as those things are kind of occurring, they want you to have some tools to help you feel better. And they spend so much time in phase two helping us manage the emotional distress and having tools and techniques to use because our brain cannot reprocess what it can't focus on. And so if we can't stay focused, that could be fight or flight, meaning like, I gotta get out of here, I can't handle it. We go into kind of like a panic attack feeling, or even the freeze when we dissociate and our brain kind of pulls the ripcord. Whichever way our brain tries to cope, it can't reprocess when it's out of the resilient zone because it can't focus. It can't talk about it in detail. It can't stay with the moment, as uncomfortable as it may be, and continue the conversation. And the overall reason that they believe EMDR works, there's still a ton of research being done and a lot more that need to find out, but our brain does the bilateral stimulation, meaning our eyes dart left to right during our REM sleep. And it's during that time that they believe our brain processes through all that we've gone through in a day and all that we've experienced. And so if we can't focus in on those things while our eyes move left to right, then it's not given the chance to actually dig back into the old stuff, pull it out, talk about it in detail, focus on the images, and clean it up and put it away. I always think of it like Inside Out. I've referenced this before where, you know, we're trying to rebuild those marbles that they put in our memory and roll them away. And if we can't focus enough to pick up all the little shards, then we can't put the marble back together. And so that is, in a nutshell, or in a marble, why EMDR does not work for everyone. And if we aren't able to stay present and to stay in that resilient zone during the process, then we're not going to get very far.
A house built out of stone, wooden floors, walls, and window sills, tables and chairs worn by all of the dust. This is a place where I don't feel. This is a place where I feel at home. Home for you. branches were soaked by the color of green. Ground had a rose and passed its knees. By the cracks of a skin I climbed to the top. I climbed the tree to see. When the gods came around to blow me down, held on as tightly as you held on me, held on as tightly as you held on me.
EMDR initially aims to process past stressful or traumatic experiences which may have led to a host of symptoms and problems. Despite critics' concerns about its effectiveness, data show that EMDR therapy has successfully helped more than 1 million people who were dealing with psychological difficulties stemming from some type of traumatic experience. Associate of the Greek Institute of Trauma Therapy, Vasilikis Fyri, adamantly defends the effectiveness of EMDR and explains the therapeutic process behind it in more detail.
EMDR stems in the very evolution of neuroscience. We take everything, all the experiments, all the recent findings, and we put it into our therapy. This is why EMDR therapy is highly structured. We start teaching people how to be in their everyday lives, how to be safe within their bodies, how to have a more creative response into their environment and their everyday lives. And then when they become stronger and resourceful, this is when they can face adversity, everything that the brain holds that is traumatic. Because traumatic experience overfloods the brain and is restored outside of the mainstream memory network. So a person is triggered without knowing what's going on. In the face of the adversity, the systems that are activated are the reptile brain, structures that are in the basis of the brain. The upper cortical brain has no idea of what's going on. Now, if a brain is, let's say, fit, can activate the upper brain, then the solutions that this person can find are creative and the solutions can help the person move forward. Okay, now if a brain is brought up in an environment that was highly demanding, that was neglecting, that didn't help the person to grow up feeling safe inside, then we have a brain that is reptile. The upper cortical brains do not function. So if we have a brain that is functioning only from the fight or flight state, then we have a person with reptile behaviors and reptile mode of behaving, and the solutions that this brain finds are not functional. This is when we have addictions, drinking, violence, and depressive symptoms, and all the disorders.
And how do you help this person overcome these disorders? What is the technique you use?
Within therapy, we don't start with a bilateral stimulation because the brain cannot activate, cannot access the trauma. What we do first is we help the person to be embodied. We teach them skills, qualities, like everyday qualities that they need. And then when they are ready, then the brain can access the pain. And we reprocess it with a bilateral stimulation. What the bilateral stimulation does is it helps the pain and the suffering to be down so that the brain can really be taught from the experience.
How do you unlock repressed memories? And are these memories real? And
absolutely, they are real. We work with real memories. How do we unlock it? Because from the very start, we work from the bottom up. We teach people how to calm down. We teach people how to be present in their life and observe. This is what we do basically is we access the upper function of the brain so that the person knows how it is. The cortical brain is the general of the brain. So if the person knows how to access the upper function means we can access all the memories that are there.
Can EMDR stop panic attacks?
Panic attacks are not such a problem. Panic attacks are triggers. This is just a symptom. A panic attack is simply a reptile brain that is activated from a stimuli that doesn't know why is triggered. A panic attack comes because there's a brain full of anxiety, full of cortisol and adrenaline that doesn't know what to do with it.
Last but not least, EMDR's founder and other practitioners have used untestable hypotheses to explain studies which some say show no effect, that are non-scientific and eventually do not heal. How do you respond to that?
EMDR is highly researched. In fact, it is the most researched therapy there is. And us therapists know very well that it works.
EMDR therapy can last from 1 to 4 sessions for a simple trauma, for example, a car accident, to a year or more for more complex problems and disorders. While the patient conducts the eye movements, he or she simultaneously comes into contact with feelings, thoughts, images, physical sensations associated with these memories. The therapist interrupts the bilateral stimuli at regular intervals to ensure that the client's processing is progressing sufficiently. The therapist facilitates processing by making clinical decisions about modes of supportive interventions. The goal is the rapid processing of information related to the negative experience, which will lead to an adaptive resolution. According to Shapiro, this results in symptom reduction. The aim of the EMDR method is the transformation of a dysfunctional assimilation of a traumatic experience into a functional one within a safe, therapeutic context. It is not enough to simply eliminate the symptoms and to extinguish any dependent reactions. Mainly, it aims to process the negative experience, the dysfunctional thoughts and feelings on a psychological, physical, and neurophysiological level. The EMDR method is carried out only by trained mental health specialists, psychologists or psychiatrists, and requires a basic psychotherapeutic training, while its correct application requires a lot of clinical experience. The EMDR method is conducted in individual psychotherapy sessions and is applied to adults, teenagers, and children. Generally speaking, most people find EMDR treatment to be safe and comfortable. A good trauma therapist will help you to be able to adjust the therapy sessions so that they are as effective as possible and so that there are as few uncomfortable effects as possible. EMDR is an 8-phase treatment method: history taking, client preparation assessment, desensitization, installation, body scan, closure, and re-evaluation of treatment effect are the 8 phases of this treatment, which are briefly described.
My love, she hides away like a ghost. Ooh, does she know that we bleed the same? Ooh, don't I cry, but I'll break that way.
From his years of experience as a physician and addiction recovery expert, Dr. Gabor Maté has identified 7 major impacts that trauma has on a person.
So trauma is a constriction. It's a narrowing. It's a diminishment of your emotional functioning, your psychic, psychological functioning. So what I'm saying about trauma is that trauma is not what happens to you. Trauma is what happens inside you as a result of what happens to you. how many of you had the experience that you had a strong gut feeling about something and you ignored it and you were sorry afterwards? Sorry that you ignored it. Just raise your hand if you had that experience. Okay, most people here. Now, that's what I mean. That's the first sign of trauma, or the first impact of trauma, is a separation from yourself. Because your gut feelings are the strongest guide for what you need in the world. They're essential. How long would you survive out there in nature if you ignored your gut feelings? You wouldn't. You'd be dead. That's how important gut feelings are. What makes us disconnect from our gut feelings so that they're actually even there telling you and you ignore it? Well, you've been disconnected from yourself. That's the first impact of trauma, is a disconnection from the self. The second impact of trauma is you disconnect from other people. No, you just don't trust others. You just don't trust others. And you feel very much isolated and on your own. So addiction is a very lonely kind of thing. Even if you use addiction to connect with other people, you're using it because you feel isolated. So there's a disconnection from other people, a mistrust, and isolation. That's the second impact of trauma. The third impact of trauma is your view of the world. So how do you see the world? What kind of world do you live in? So whatever how I see the world, that's the world I live in. So if I see the world as hostile and dangerous and untrustworthy, I'm going to have a very different life than if I see the world as basically a good place where there's suffering and there's joy. It's complex, but fundamentally, I belong here. I live in a very different world if I believe that than if I'm convinced that it's a hostile, dangerous world. So trauma distorts your view of the world in a negative way. Number four, trauma gives you pain. It gives you a wound that there might be some scar tissue over it, but the wound is never healed, actually. But there's pain there. And then that's pain that you need to escape from. So it imposes a lifelong pain. When I say lifelong, I mean until you deal with it. That's the fourth impact of trauma. The fifth impact of trauma is actually on brain development. Our trauma actually affects how our brains develop. Children have no self-regulation. So if you're stressed as an adult, if you're mature enough, you can regulate yourself. You can take a few breaths. You can calm yourself down. You can say, okay, slow down. Let me think about this. Let me deal with this. An infant can't do that. Infant's got no self-regulation whatsoever. So the infant's brain requires the mature function of the adult's brain to regulate itself. But what if the adult's brain is not functioning maturely because that adult themselves never got the right conditions for the healthy development? Now you have an immature adult's brain regulating or trying to regulate an immature infant's brain. So that self-regulation never develops. Number six is that trauma gives you a shame-based view of yourself. So you become actually ashamed of who you are. Not just of what you do, but of who and what you are as a person. So trauma gives you a shame-derived sense of yourself. That's number six. And the seventh impact of trauma is it makes it difficult for you to be in the present moment. It keeps you stuck in the past. So you react to the present, or you're thinking you're reacting to the present, but actually you're reacting to the past. And that's an important one because it affects everybody.
Dr. Gabor Mate also talks about how big is the impact of our emotions to our physical body and how trauma really affects us if we don't make it conscious.
When I was a year old, my mother actually gave me to a total stranger in the street to save my life because she didn't know if she'd be alive the next day. So I didn't see her for a month. Deep sense of abandonment, not being wanted. Now, I don't recall that. I can't recall being handed to a stranger in the streets of Budapest because there's nothing to recall with. The brain's organ in the brain, the hippocampus that encodes recall memory, is not developed then yet. It doesn't develop till later. But the emotional implicit memory of abandonment is deep in me. When there's a loss emotionally, that translates into biology. So it's not that there's biology here and our emotions here. It's that the emotions and the biology are completely inseparable. And what happens on the emotional plane inevitably will have its manifestations on a biological plane. So what you lose emotionally translates into biological events in your body. And that begins with brain development. I began to be interested in brain development when I was diagnosed with ADHD. I was 53, I think, 54, 53. And within a couple of months, two of my kids were diagnosed, which seemed to go along with the mainstream medical view that what we've got here is a genetic disorder, which I never bought into for a minute. And why didn't I buy into it? Because although I didn't know anything about the brain or how it developed, I knew something. The tuning out, the absent-mindedness that characterizes ADD is not a disease, inherited or otherwise. What is tuning out? It's an adaptive response to stress. So that if I were to stress you right now, but I mean that is to be verbally abusive, emotionally insulting, domineering, you'd go into a stress state. And how could you deal with it? Well, you could just walk out the door. Or you could stand up and say, you can't talk to me like that. I will not accept it. And if you couldn't walk out, nor did you have the strength to confront me, to fight back, if flight or fight wasn't available to you, there's still a third thing you could do. There are, 100, 200 people here in the room with you. You could ask for help. But what if you couldn't do any of those things? Then how would you handle the stress? Well, you wouldn't. Your brain would handle it by a number of defense mechanisms, the salient of which would be dissociation. You dissociate, all of a sudden you're not here. Now you're not suffering as much. So it's simply a coping response is all it is. The way we adapt to early stress helps us endure that difficult period in the life of the helpless child, but those same adaptations become sources of pathology, threaten your health, threaten the length, you know, your longevity even. So what's adaptive in one situation, what's meant to be a temporary state, becomes a long-term trait. And when it goes from state to a trait, now it's a source of dysfunction and pathology. So that's what I intuited about the tuning out. But what I didn't know, and this is astonishing, is the how the brain actually develops. And how the brain develops is in interaction with the environment. So that the brain is not genetically programmed. The potentials are genetically set, and the trajectory of development in terms of what circuits will develop when, that's set genetically, but how they will develop, how successfully they will unfold and connect, and what systems in the brain will become to dominate, that's not genetically programmed. That depends on the interaction of that individual with the environment. The most significant factor shaping the physiological development of the brain is the emotional relationship with the parenting environment. And the necessary condition for optimal brain development, which is so rarely available in North America, are parents who are emotionally available, consistently available, non-stressed, non-depressed, and mutually responsive or attuned to the child. Now, anything that interferes with the capacity of the parent to offer those qualities to the child will have its impact on brain development. So if you look at my ADHD, it's really easy to understand. I was born in Budapest, Hungary in 1944, Jewish parents. This is Second World War. And when I'm 2 months old, the Nazis occupy Hungary. The genocide had already exterminated most Jews in Eastern Europe. No, it was Hungary's turn. But the day after the Wehrmacht, the German army, marches into Budapest, my mother phones the pediatrician, and I'm 2 months old. And she says, would you please come and see Gabor, because he's crying all the time. And the pediatrician says, of course I'll come, but I'll tell you, all my Jewish babies are crying. Now, what are you supposed to be going on? I mean, as infants, what do we know about Nazis, Hitler, genocide, Second World War? Nothing. What are we responding to? The stress of our mothers. And the stress of our mothers program our brains. Now, what do you do as a two-month-old, and that was my first year of my life, when your mother's depressed, terrorized, in grief over the death of her parents in Auschwitz, the absence of her husband in a forced labor camp? As a two-month-old, as a six-month-old, what do you do with that pain and stress? You tune it out. But when do you tune it out? When your brain is developing. When every second, there are periods in the first year of life, when every second in this space of time, millions of brain connections are being made. Guess what? That adaptation of tuning out goes from a temporary state to a trait. And so 52 years later, I'm finally diagnosed with ADHD. Why my kids? My kids grew up in Vancouver, no war. My kids weren't abused. There was no substance addiction. I wasn't an alcoholic or anything like that. I was a workaholic physician. Why was I a workaholic physician? Because the message I got from the world very early on is that I wasn't wanted. Not because my mother didn't want me, but for the child to feel wanted, the mother has to be happy. The mother has to be emotionally present. And children, when they don't get that, it's all about themselves. Children are truly narcissistic in that sense. It's not a pejorative, just a statement of reality. They think it's all about themselves. They think it's all about themselves. When you see a narcissistic personality, what you're seeing is a highly traumatized person who still thinks it's all about him because he didn't get those needs met as a child. So he's still trying to get it. Pay attention to me. So the personality that we develop actually is an adaptation. And then when I was a year old, my mother actually gave me to a total stranger in the street to save my life because she didn't know if she'd be alive the next day. And so I didn't see her for a month. Deep sense of abandonment, not being wanted. Now, I don't recall that. I can't recall being handed to a stranger in the streets of Budapest because there's nothing to recall with. The brain's organ in the brain, the hippocampus that encodes recall memory is not developed then yet. It doesn't develop till later. But the emotional, implicit memory of abandonment is deep in me so that when 5 weeks ago, I arrived home from Vancouver, from Philadelphia, from a speaking engagement, I'm feeling really good about myself. I think I'm really centered and grounded, haha. And my wife does not pick me up at the airport, or she texts me saying I'll be 15 minutes late. I go into a rage. What's that rage about? The woman whom I need is not here for me. That's an implicit memory. And we're governed by these implicit memories until we become aware, until we become conscious, until I can notice that anger rising up in me. Anger rising. What's that about? Like Thich Nhat Hanh talks about calming. First of all, you recognize that there's an emotion arising inside you. And then he says, you accept it. Right now, there's anger. And then you hold the anger mindfully, like you'd hold a baby. Then you look. What is it actually all about? And then the insight comes, this is old stuff. Okay, well then, nothing to be upset about, right? So the solution is mindfulness, but I'm laying out the problem for you, which is the implicit memories now with my children. And so since I wasn't wanted, I have to compensate. Now, how do you compensate for not being wanted? By making yourself needed. They may not want me, but they're going to need me. So this is going to be on all the time. And I'm available for all my patients all the time, 24/7. And I'll never say no to taking on more patients, because that's another sign that I'm being wanted, right? Or needed. Where does that leave my kids? With the sense that they're not wanted, because daddy's not around. And mommy is so stressed, because daddy's not around. So then they tune out. Now they're diagnosed with ADD. Genetic disease? Nonsense. Multi-generational trauma and stress being passed on as it affects brain development. And if you want to understand why we're seeing a preponderance of childhood developmental disorders, like all these diagnoses, autism, 40-fold increase, but all these diagnoses, behavior problems, the school problems, the learning difficulties, you know what we're looking at? We're looking at the biology of loss as it's affecting the brains of our children, and then how we respond to it is with medications and behavior control, instead of saying, what's going on here? Or what's going on here is that our children are acting out their lost attachment relationships.
The trauma we experience is often inherent from our childhood experiences, or as mentioned, from a powerful traumatic experience. How we decide to treat it in later life is a personal decision that varies depending on the method we have chosen to heal. EMDR is just one of those methods, but there are other processes too. The common goal is the patient's movement from a negative belief to a new positive belief about him or herself and the prospect of improving the person's functioning. I'm Katerina Badzaki. Join us next week in another of our Infinite Curious programs of ERT and The Voice of Greece, where we will explore another trauma healing process related to psychotherapy. Meanwhile, it is important to confront our fears and not run away from them, as dealing with our traumas will help us have a full and conscious life.
Je te laisserai tes mots en dessous de ta porte, en dessous de la mule qui charme, tout près de la place où tes pieds passent, cachés dans les trous d'un temps divin, et quand tu es seul.
Η φωνή της Ελλάδας, φωνή όλων των Ελλήνων.